we don't need to hide from whom we are and whom we have been. It's what has made us into who we are today. And one of the things when you walk into North Avenue Market that you will see is that we look to celebrate some of the different components of us.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. As always, I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, and I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick, dining editor at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm doing really well today.
That's good.
So far, I'm looking forward, and there's more snow in the forecast.
Not as much snow as Minnesota. I don't know if you saw, but like... The weather people are like, well, this is new. We don't normally see ice ages in the forecast.
Yeah. No, my in-laws live in Minnesota. And they've sort of been chomped with snow. I think Minnesota had a break from tons and tons of snow for a few years in there. Because I know, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, they were always getting.
Apparently, you know,
it's a lot like here.
Yeah, you know, they're getting all of our snow this winter because we've been pretty. It's been pretty kind here. We had a little bit of snow this past week, but that's pretty much already melted.
Yeah. So, and we really do need to get snow. So I'm not gonna complain.
Do we need to get snow, Lori? Does my commute need to be 15 minutes longer because I'm driving 30 miles per hour on the freeway?
It's not about you. It's about the earth, Matt.
I think even the earth is like, do I need snow? Like, is this something I need in my life? I think even the earth is like, it's like hail. I can't imagine the earth is like, you know what we need? Hail.
So, well, all the plants need to stay pleasantly frozen until it gets to be the right time in spring so they can
pleasantly
bloom.
Frozen is only those are that combination of words has only been used for ice cream. No other living thing has ever been like pleasantly frozen my state.
Well, we won't go into this totally, but I talked to the farmers about the dormancy that some of their crops need.
That's a different podcast, which I'm sure we've done. You should listen to all of our farming podcasts that we've had really awesome conversations. But we are not here to talk about farming.
No, or snow,
we are not here to talk about snow, though we could probably go for another 30 minutes on snow if we really wanted to.
We could.
We have a very special guest here today with us, Lori. Yeah.
As usual, yes. So today we are here with Chris Harris-Morse, who is the founder of North Avenue Market, which I will just contextualize is a new, really community-driven food hall space. And it functions in a number of different ways. But I'm gonna let Chris really kind of take the lead on talking about it. But it's on the west side of the city, right on the edge of Wauwatosa. And it kind of pulls together like three or four neighborhoods. And so it's very well placed that way. So Chris,
and now he's placed well on our podcast. I was gonna
say. right between us here on the screen.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Your story of how this project came to be. Is pretty compelling. I mean, the market, North Avenue Market, opened late last summer. I think your grand opening was in September, if I'm remembering correctly. But there was a lot more work. There were a number of years that went into building this space. And I think a lot more thinking that went into it prior to that. So can you kind of take us through whatever timeline you kind of think is pertinent in terms of how your career switched over and you decided that creating North Avenue Market was a worthy goal.
Awesome. Well, I will try to be brief. I'm not normally brief, but I will try to be brief. You'll have to work me through it. I'm not from Wisconsin. I'm from North Carolina, born and raised in North Carolina.
Ooh, what part of North Carolina?
I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, hey, that's awesome. I was just in North Carolina recently this past fall. So, yeah.
I think it's a beautiful state. I think it's one of the most beautiful states, you know, in our 50.
Take that, Montana.
And they do get less snow.
Evidence, Lori, nature's doing fine without snow. Anyway,
they're probably getting just as much as we are this year, though, with some of the blizzards and things that have come through, and they're not prepared for it. So,
no, that's the difference between us. They get like an inch of snow, and they're like, "Well, we got to shut the city down
for
the week."
Which was weird last week that we shut the city down the day before the snow actually came.
What was that about? I now live right next to a high school, and it was like it was so weird. There was nobody in class, and I was like, "But it's totally normal outside. Why is it canceled now?"
It was like, welcome to North Carolina is what it was.
the North Carolinization of the Wisconsin.
Yes. But that's where I'm originally from. But I've done a lot of different things. I've been an officer in the military. I've worked in corporate. I've worked in academia. I've worked in nonprofit. I've worked in manufacturing. And although I've done all those things, I didn't have the passion to do those anymore. And when my husband and I met, I was a CEO for Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Kalamazoo, Michigan, and he worked in the financial industry here. And when we decided we were going to be together, I resigned from my post to move here to Wisconsin, to Milwaukee. And it was starting to look for something to do. And I was like, I can do all those things again, but I'm not passionate about it. So he says, do what makes you happy. And that's what really started the journey. Well, to understand that, I've lived on my own since I was 16, realistically, since I was 5 or 6 years old. I joined my local boys club over 50 years ago. So the first day after my sixth birthday, July 5th, 1974. Between the ages of 6 and 16, I was molested by 13 different people, some on multiple occasions. And you add that along with living on my own since I was 16, I really didn't have a foundation for being able to do what makes me happy. I had a foundation for doing what I needed in order to survive. So even though I advise people to do what they are passionate about or what makes them happy, it was a new concept for me to embrace. And it really took a while for me to get to that point. But eventually I did. And in September
I'm just going to interrupt briefly just to say, and that made the Girls and Boys Club an incredibly important organization for you. But then which carried on then, you know, for you to have worked there was significant.
It still plays a significant piece in even the culture of the market setting and how we come about. Because my club that I joined, there was 1 year that I was not a part of the club. My family moved outside of the area and they left me for weeks and months at a time. And we basically, we had an outhouse. We didn't have really running water, very little electricity of any. And we basically had taken an old barn and converted it into this place to live that they paid $10 a month for, just to give you an idea. It was the first time in my life that I think I was like 9 or 10 years old. And I actually thought of taking my own life because I didn't have my club that was there. And it was two things that stopped me. One was my faith in God. And the other was I don't like pain, but I had literally taken a steak knife and stuck it to my stomach and was like, okay, I'm ready to do this. And, it was my club, fortunately we moved back to the city and I got reconnected back with my club. I mean, I was their youth of the year twice. They gave me money to help me go to college. They got two of my younger cousins engaged with it. And one was a national youth of the year winner. Another was a regional youth of the year winner. And throughout my life, I've served on boards as secretary, vice president, president, and past president. And I've served as CEO and I serve on the board of directors for the local club here in Greater Milwaukee. And so that has changed my life. And it's like, what type of space can I also create that helps bring a community together? And when I think about the things to do, is I needed time to come and just to veg. at moments. I needed time to come and be creative. I needed time to come and to connect with people. I needed time to come and just be around positivity. And so the club provided that, but I wanted another community resource and to be able to provide that. And so going back to when my husband said, do what makes you happy, I looked at my bucket list. I had two things on the bucket list. One was opening a bed and breakfast. Another was opening a coffee shop. And it wasn't about the bed and breakfast and it wasn't about the coffee. It was about creating community. And those are tools to be able to do that. And I thought the bed and breakfast would take too much time. I was wrong. I think it would take less time than probably. Yes. So I started a journey of doing a coffee shop, and I don't drink coffee. So I had partnered with my realtor, and we were looking for a place to lease in the area. My husband and I live in Washington Heights. I wanted it to be a part of my community. So it was either going to be on Belit Street or on North Avenue. We couldn't find the right place to lease. And my realtor says, would you be open to buying a place? And my husband happened to overhear it on the phone and he immediately goes, yes. And I go, okay, sure. So my realtor brought me to a place that's directly across the street from the space that I ended up buying. And the space is about 600 square feet. It has a little parking lot. And I go, if I was about coffee and that was my real purpose, I said, maybe, but I'm about community and I'm looking at coffee as a tool to build that. So this space doesn't really grant me what I need. And to manipulate it in other ways, the costs and the return just weren't really going to be feasible. Well, my husband happened to be with me and he's looking across the street and he goes, hey, I just received a letter in the mail last week from Associated Bank that they're closing the branch down at the end of January of 2020. So this was the end of September, beginning of October of 2019 that we began this process. And my realtor got me in to do a tour. The space is over 10,000 square feet. And I'm like, and it has a drive-through.
That's a big coffee shop.
That's a big coffee shop. Yeah. So I was like, okay, this is more than a coffee shop. And I immediately reflected on some of the great components of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Public Market, Crossroads Collective. I went and checked out the Sherman Phoenix. I was able to find a charrette from Uptown Crossing and look at some of the needs that the community was asking for there. And then with some other experience that I had with checking out food halls and things around the country, it led me into this whole endeavor. But everything we do, it's about community and how to bridge the gap. Because one of the other components that I was taking into effect, my husband is white and I'm black. So when moving here, initially, I go, Milwaukee's identified as the most segregated city in America. I come from North Carolina, and at a point in high school, I had to cross a KKK picket line to go to school. Segregation means something different to me. And I'm like, I'm going to be seeing Milwaukee through a different lens when I'm here, although I've seen it through my husband's lens up until that point. And I really needed to understand what I was getting into. And the question always becomes, am I going to be a part of the problem or am I going to become part of the solution? Because I would be down the street. And people would say, we don't go and cross over 60th. And then I'd be with some other, you know, people and they're like, well, we don't go to the west side of 60th because they felt uncomfortable. And the thing is that I have a building that is in Uptown Crossing that people weren't comfortable coming into or would say they weren't comfortable coming into. And yet today, when we look at all the neighborhoods that's around us, right across the street is Washington Heights, is where I'm from. If you go to the west side of 60th on the north, you're in East Hosa, and on the south, you're in Pabst Park. So you have those four communities that come together. They all feel that the market is their market. And what's changed about that? It's not, we haven't changed a physical location. We've just put some new clothing on it and dress it up a little bit. But it's the mindset of the people that has changed to allow them to come and to venture into the space. And it's the food, it's the, you know, the entertainment and the space that brings them here. But it's the people that really make up this community. And my husband and I both wanted to create something that would go beyond who we are as people. And the hope is that it doesn't only become successful now, but it continues to be successful long after I'm gone.
Yeah. So it sounds like the kind of interest in food that you've had has kind of been interest in the community that forms around food, from what sounds like to me. But was food a major component? Like, was that something you had an interest in? Because I mean, you talked about bed and breakfast, and obviously you have the food market, the market hall now, both food related. But was food always something, or was it that communal aspect of food that really attracted you to it?
For me, it's the why, and the why is about community, and what brings people together is food.
Yeah.
You know, food, entertainment, and the space to do a variety of different things. And so when I look at the market, it's become a neighborhood hub because it's reflecting on what the market is. And the food component is I wanted a diversity of food and wanted a diversity of owners that come into the market as well. And so when you're looking to try to create this intentional piece where you have a diverse group, you all of a sudden you have this melting pot where everyone can come together and you can see the great flavor of the community in which we serve. But it is food components. I'm not a food expert, and so I don't try to claim that, but I try to partner with people who have this as their skill set, that they are more foodies, and my job is to create the space that they can create and share with the community.
Yeah. Well, and in building this space, you probably learned a lot more about food and the needs of folks who are cooking food than you did before. I don't think we've ever discussed this. But, you know, in building kitchens and, you know, considering the size of spaces that people needed as vendors, you probably got a quick lesson in the restaurant that you would never run, right?
Yeah. You know, I do, Lori. And the piece is that Milwaukee is a very foodie place, as people will call themselves, and the culture and the components. And so for me, a big piece was partnering with someone who was really more of an expert in this. And so early on, Bitter Cube owner Ira Koplovitz and I partnered together, and I could really lean on him to say, hey, you know, how does this fit in the component in which we are trying to create? And because he has more of that, you know, that palate, that taste, and the connections in the city and how that goes. But we also wanted to give people an opportunity that hadn't necessarily had a chance to be able to get out there and explore some of their components and what they do. So it's trying to accomplish a lot of different pieces. But it's about what our community wants and needs. And the feedback has been wonderful from that aspect. And we're continuing to grow and to evolve. As Lori mentioned earlier, we opened in September, but we're taking this time now to do a sort of a reset to say, what did we learn? You know, what has gone well? And then what are opportunities that we have to really improve and better reflect what the community is needing?
Go ahead.
So, because February marks, February is like the sixth month, I guess, that you would be open. But you saw some things kind of early on in terms of how people use the space. Probably got feedback about what people wanted, and just announced a week or two ago that you're gonna, you know, and you call it a reset. And that's, I think, a really, really good description. But a lot of times folks don't take advantage of that right away. You know, they would say, oh, let's be open for, you know, a year or two and see how this goes. What was it that you saw that made you say, okay, let's do some things and change some things right now?
You know, I think that there was a variety of different things. There were some pieces in how we have the space laid out And sometimes you create more work to try to drive traffic into certain areas versus rethinking how to use that space. And so in our garden level, which is the lower level, we had two dessert stations down there. And there are different things that we can do to drive more traffic down there. But what people were really asking for is meeting space. You know, a lot more event component was coming about. And it was, do we try to drive more people down there to get something that we want to push out, or do we listen to what the community is saying and say, hey, how do we set this up for them? And then how do we make the other food vendors and things of that nature more relevant to what the community is looking at? And so that's what we've done. We are on our garden level, we're making it more into an events center. And so now that will drive more people here to have more food and components and things of that nature. And on the main level, what we're doing is we are taking our Sam's Deli and our coffee shop, and we had an ice cream component that were on the garden level, and we're going to make that into more of the cafe where you had the coffee shop drive through. And so we'll do a little rebranding there. So we still have those same products, but what that does now is our coffee shop didn't have its own breakfast component from, it just had muffins. But now we'll be able to have breakfast component out of that, and we'll be able to have a dinner component as well. And so it can be open throughout the day, which is in one of the two main anchors of the market, because you also have the bar, which is run by Bittercube, and our Mosler's Vault, which is run by Bittercube as well. And Mosler's Vault is our cocktail specialty bar that was identified by Milwaukee Magazine as a number two cocktail space in the city. And so those are the cornerstones, but we need great food to partner with that. It's not one or the other, it's both. And so by doing this, we're able to consolidate some of the space on the main level and bring in some other vendors with some more unique components that complement what we need from a community standpoint. So it's looking up and down the corridor and saying what's there, but it's also looking inside and saying what complements what we have or what we don't have.
Yeah. And so this situation not only allows you to consolidate that coffee / deli concept so that can be more useful all day. But it gives you more room for more vendors, which are also then together on the same floor, which means everybody has kind of access to everything edible, you know, correct, on that ground. Yeah,
correct. So we're looking at different types of food vendors too. So like we've got questions that are, can you get a vegan vendor in here? And so, you know, that'll be a focus, and we're working on and close to coming to partnership with a particular company that will be able to do that. And so we're just
wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's still looking at that. It's also looking at the different ethnicities that we're representing here in the types of food vendors that we're able to bring in, because we had Splendid Boba Tea, who's not a part of us, but that was a huge driver with great food. And Molly Thau is awesome, and she had a great product of boba tea and Korean chicken sandwiches that were outstanding. And now she's able to go off and do something that's going to be even greater than what she was able to do here. And so we become that foundation to give someone to be able to spring off into that, as well as bringing others. And we're going to do more of a mix of those types of components that we'll have in here.
Yeah. Why is the kind of food hall concept, I think for a lot of people, like this phrase has just blown up over the past 5 years, obviously here in Milwaukee. Why has the kind of food hall concept, the market hall concept, really grown over the past few years and become such, I don't want to use the word trendy because that implies, you know, a beginning and end, but like, why has it become such a favorite of developers and of community building?
You know, I can only speak to how I have come about into being that, because remember, when I started, I was just looking to lease a space to do coffee. I did not start with I'm going to create a food hall. Yay. It was for me, it's a more of a reflection of what my neighborhood, and it still goes back to the why, and the why is about community. And so I look at what we have slightly different than just a food hall. I call it a neighborhood hub, because not only do we have food, we have a drive-through that you can go online and order from multiple vendors and go through the drive-through and pick it up. We have a stage that we can do entertainment. We can do live entertainment. We can do presentations. We can do demonstrations. We have co-working office space that can be leased in the building. We have breakout rooms that can be leased. We'll be doing some with the new event component. We'll now have like comedy night and speak it forward and trivia and just a variety of different things. But also, we do things like the 59th Street neighbors wanted to do a gathering. And so we can create something that is unique just for that neighborhood and bring them in and do, you know, a dollar off beer, $2 off cocktail, and create a specialty thing just for the neighborhood. It's reflective of what the neighborhood needs and is asking for, is what's driving what we're doing. But when you look at food halls, the reason many of them survive the pandemic is because of the diversity that they have in the different food types of offerings, and that it's a little different than going to McDonald's or going to Burger King or something of that nature. But it's bringing in these unique, high quality food components that you can go. And now a family doesn't have to say, well, we either have to go here or we have to go here to meet one person or another person's desire. But you can come to one place and be able to meet all of that. And when you have more like the neighborhood hub and what we're doing, it just becomes a communal space that you can do, whether we have people coming to do book club or, you know, tonight we have a group of faith-based members that are coming together from all around the city, and they find that this is a hub that they can meet. And so we're opening our doors so that they can have a private event to be able to do that. And they do it on a monthly basis. So it creates a lot of different things. And at the end of the day, when you start to look and reflect, it's becoming a bridge for our community versus a wall that just says it's just for Uptown Crossing.
Yeah. Well, and we've kind of gotten to the point where you moved in, you know, you're constantly looking at what you're offering, making changes as needed. But I think one of the interesting things, I mean, this was kind of a challenge, from the beginning, from the point when you realized the bank was too big to be a coffee shop. And you kind of changed gears. But the bank had some issues, you know, itself that prevented you from closing on that building as soon as I think you would have liked to. And then there was a matter of, oh, okay, now this is a much bigger project. You know, how do we get funding? How do we do this? Can you talk a little bit about just the challenges, and the high points, the victories that you kind of had along the way? Because that was a couple of years of real work, you know, on your part.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the piece was is that when you start and you're just looking to lease a space and you have this certain budget, all of a sudden, and you start to blow up on some of these different components. 2 days, you know, I put in the offer to purchase the building. It never went on the market. That was at the end of February, beginning of March of 2020. And 2 days after we were under contract, the seller said, hey, we have a DNR issue that is 8+ years old and it's not resolved yet. And my thing was, okay, pause. You know, my due diligence will not start until that is resolved. And initially we were looking to open in 2020, later in that year. Excuse me. And so what happened was what they thought would take 4 months to complete ended up taking 16 months to complete. And it was, so I said 2 days after we went on a contract that they recognized that. Well, it was 2 weeks.
And this was like, you wouldn't think of a bank as having a DNR issue, mm-hmm. right? But it was the replacement of the transition from oil to gas for heat. Is that?
Yes. So what had happened is that the building opened in 1949 as a United Federal Savings and Loan. It's always been a bank since its inception. And at a point, it had an oil tank. And in 91, when they were switching over from the oil tank, and they eventually removed the oil tank, then it had 100 gallons of oil underneath that. And then there was another 100 gallons of oil and water mixture underneath that. And so now you have the soil and you have all the gases and you've got the different mitigation components that need to be done throughout that. And so that's part of what was happening in that space. And so it was, okay, we're going to pause, you know, on that. And what I was about to say as well is within 2 weeks after also going under contract, we have what? The pandemic. And so now both of these things are going on at the same time. For me, it was, even though technically my due diligence doesn't start until after the DNR issue is resolved, I was all in the project because it goes back to my why. It was about creating the space to build a bridge for community that I think Milwaukee's a great place. It's the first place that's felt like home since I left North Carolina. And I've lived in Missouri, Oregon, Colorado, California, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And so that piece is it gave me a chance to make some enhancements, yeah, to the space. It gave me a chance to recognize, oh, we can do this drive-through and have everyone take advantage of it, which was a great idea from my partner, Ira, who was bringing that in. I had gone and checked out more food halls and we added more walk-up window components and the garage doors that we placed in the space. So if we ever have to go into a component where we have to shut down, we have a myriad of venues that we can be able to meet the needs of the community without having the food vendors have to shut down. And so we are better able to pivot. And it just allowed us time to do other enhancements. But when the bank finally got the DNR issue complete, well, at this time, now the financial funding components that I started with are like, we're not doing that type of funding anymore. And so I had to pivot on the funding components. And so I'm blessed to have had Milwaukee Economic Development Corporation, MEDC, come and partner. And they immediately jumped in, came in and provided support. But then we're working through SBA components. And when you're a startup business and doing different things, they had a series of challenges that they would throw one after the other. And finally, Milwaukee Development Corporation came in and said, you know what, we're going to provide the backbone support to the funding that MEDC is providing that complements what Chris is bringing to the table, because we believe in this community component. And, you know, the piece is that there are a lot of financial institutions that say that they're out there to help minority-owned businesses. But when you really look at it, for a business that's this size magnitude, we're not a huge business, but we're a lot larger than what they're accustomed to supporting. You know, they're looking at giving $25,000 to $50,000, which would not be able to change any of the components in which we're doing. These guys came in with a lot more significant funding, you know, for a project that by the time we do this reset component will be over $3 million that we're investing into this component. So that's a big difference. And that's one that helps to make community change and helps make cultural change. It helps to begin to bridge, the gap. And my job is to try to make this, you know, successful. But no matter how it turns out, I think it's already successful in the eyes of opening our community to other ways to look at how to support minority-owned businesses to make an impact across our community and to become a bridge for the beautiful people that we are.
Yeah, yeah. Because that was a first for them. Correct.
To support
a minority owned project at the level that they support you. Am I wrong?
I think that was a first for MDC to do that, and for some of the components of MEDC that provided some of that funding to be able to do that at the amount that we were looking to do. And what I can say is about David Latuna and John Miller, the president and vice president of MEDC, they were on board 100% from the beginning, and huge, huge, you know, advocates. And, you know, the piece is that they were able to say the same things in some ways that I may have said, but the ears that heard what they said opened up more, but because it came out of their mouth, and began to break down some of the barriers. You know, you have to have advocates in the community that can do that to begin to break down some of those barriers. And so only time will tell how that goes for the rest. But I am a huge supporter of the work that they are doing, not just for my business, but for many businesses around the city.
And I was going to say, because that has potential to open up, you know, opportunities for others.
That, and you know, and I mean, even the vendors that have come into the market, so they managed to bounce back grant funds. And so all of our vendors that came in here were able to get funds to support that. Okay. And so they've also helped connect with other opportunities to help them to be able to grow and to go. And so it leads to a broader partnership that we can do. And when we say it takes a village, it takes a village. And when we say that Milwaukee is the most segregated community, I'm here to say that I've been welcome. I felt welcome from the moment that I've gotten here, and that I think that we have an opportunity, and we're reaching out and trying to make real change in our community. And it starts with the food, and it starts with, you know, this component that we're doing, but it doesn't stop here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often wonder, because I think you stand back and you can see the things that contribute to Milwaukee, that the segregation component being a part of Milwaukee. You know, you can see things that contribute to that, and the fact that that is still going on. But it's really interesting to me, because I think people are working on the ground level, and there's projects like this. And I would say lots of little projects kind of around the city that are somewhat changing that. And part of me hopes that one day we're going to wake up and we're going to go, okay, we need to stop with this dialogue. You know, that article that was written about Milwaukee being the most segregated city, that's not true anymore, right? Like, we have these things that have been put into place, and we have evolved, you know, past that. And I realize, like, that is still something, you know, that we have to move forward to.
You know, I think the thing for me is that we don't need to hide from whom we are and whom we have been. It's what has made us into who we are today. And one of the things when you walk into North Avenue Market that you will see is that we look to celebrate some of the different components of us. So I partnered with the African American Historic Society to find pictures of African American owned business throughout the decades so that people can see that. You know, we have a map of the area from the time frame and when the bank was opened up in 1949, and some of the different businesses and components that have been here, and people can see that. And we have a lot of different pieces that sort of tell, you know, a story. And when you think about the building being open in 1949, I, as a Black person, and many of the vendors that are in the market probably could not have even been serviced in that space. And yet today, it's utilized as a space to build community and to bring people together through food, and entertainment, as, you know, as the base for all of those things. But it's about the vibrancy and who we are as a community. And I think we are a beautiful community. And that's why trying to highlight some of the variety of foods and trying to be intentional about bringing in, you know, those diverse components into the market is a really critical piece, because it also then leads to bringing diverse people into the space and they get to see that we're all one people. And yet the uniqueness that we bring to the table is not something to run away from, but to be proud of and to that adds value to the community in which we are. And so I look at Milwaukee and say, it's a beautiful place. And I look at, you know, and like come to our market and see the reflection of the beauty that we have.
I just wanted to quick, so I looked this up and last year, WUWM 98 or 89.7 wrote a piece, "We are not the most segregated city in the country anymore. We are the second most segregated city in the country." So we have, so improvement, very, very slight improvement. And there have been, if you look at the demographics and stuff like that, there have been changes, particularly in the suburbs, this article says that Brown Deer, West Milwaukee, West Allis, and Wauwatosa are seeing increasing levels of racial integration. But yeah, like we've talked about, you know, I think we get frustrated as Milwaukee of being labeled as segregated. And I think at this point we're trying so hard. We're trying. And it does seem like there is some ingrounds being made, but still there, ways to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to run away from those things. I mean, we have a lot of stuff that is residual from redlining and from some of the other types of decisions that we've made as a people and as a community. Again, you know, it is, if we don't see something that we like, then what are we doing to actively engage in changing that to be, you know, for the future? And to me, the market is one of those pieces to be able to actively do something that can go again beyond me as an individual and to create the opportunity for us to be able to do that. And I think we can do that through food, and experiencing those different pieces that we grow to share and like, wow, this is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of our other podcast guests who we've spoken to, Emerald Mills, always talked about how she was always like, what can I do about this? And community was definitely a part of that. Her thing was, how do you bring people of various backgrounds together into spaces? Because to her mind, part of the issue was if you're never exposed to people who are different from you, if you never strike up conversations with those folks, get to know those folks, build relationships with those people, it contributes, of course, to, you know, constantly staying separate. And so that really resonates here, because one of the things that she was like, she's like, okay, so it can't wholesale change, you know, spaces in Milwaukee and make them more welcoming to diversity. But she started her own project that was basically bringing people together over meals who were from various backgrounds and getting people to meet each other, you know, so in a small way, you know, creating that kind of community at each of those tables, and now runs Turning Tables downtown. You know, so we have all of these things, which I think, and I think that her point about getting, once you get to know people, you know, and people of other backgrounds and people, you know, and have relationships, it becomes pretty difficult to make the sort of assumptions about others that you need to be divisive, you know, to have those divisions between
people. Agreed. You know, an example is Wisconsin Veteran Chamber of Commerce did a event here. And one of the people that I ended up speaking with came out from the West Side, from the suburbs of Waukesha, and was like, you know, I told my neighbors that I was coming here and they were like, oh, you can't go there. Or, you know, this and that and this and that. And, you know, you're going to be around Black people, you know, and the person got here, he parked, and he goes, the moment I saw the space and walked inside, he goes, I knew that this was a space that I needed to be at. And he goes, I had these different perceptions of what community in this area was like, but to break down some of those things and for him to see, to physically witness that in that space and to also come up and to share that with me, you know, to me, that is a huge win that you won't see in the dollars that are turned over necessarily. But that is about what community is. And I think that's a part of why MADC and MDC also have come in to really fully invest and be on board with what we're doing, because they see that it's more than just a food hall or a neighborhood hub. It is creating community and creating a space of who Milwaukee is going to be and giving us an opportunity to springboard into so many different things. Again, we're using the food and we're using the entertainment as that piece to bring people together. But it's the people who are going to make the difference in how this goes forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a beautiful thought. It's, it gives people opportunities every day, you know, to make their own difference, you know, using something, you know, you're facilitating a space that has potential for all sorts of things. Yeah. So this was not easy to get up and running. And I often have stood kind of in wonderment of the fact that you went from, okay, I'm going to start a coffee shop because that's a community hub, to, okay, now I have this bank, you know, which is obviously too big and, you know, kind of even, I would say, complex in terms of turning it into a food hall, which I think has become evident in kind of like, you know, you had a layout that you thought, oh, this will work, you know, and people will kind of, you know, make their way around these two levels in a predicted way. And then it turns out, you know, well, not quite what you thought. But, you know, it's not been an easy road. I don't know. I mean, if you had to do this all over again and you knew that it was going to be like a longer road from there to here, would you still have done it? Like, are you happy enough at this point with kind of where you're going that feels really good to you?
Yeah. You know, so here's the thing. I mean, again, going back to when I started, I was just looking to lease a space. And so if someone had said, this is how much it would cost to do this, I would have walked away from the very beginning. It's a piece. It's a piece of love. And for me, it starts with my faith and, you know, for me, my faith in God. And I feel he's placed this in, it's more of his mission and what he's wanting me to do. And I'm the vessel in trying to do that. And so I try to rest in that. But I will say that, I don't think I fully understood the intricacies of the different components that I'm bringing together. Because when you look at it, I have certain food components that I own and manage. And then I have vendors that are leasing out space. Well, they own the food that they're developing, but I'm managing that relationship and component with the vendors. And then I have a vendor relationship where, you know, there's a partial revenue share. And so that's a very different, unique component. And then we have this whole entertainment component that we've got to do and bring different things, you know, in. And then I have all the community that wants to come and wants to meet and to be a part, of who I am, and trying to bring a staff together in the different ways. And oh, we have this drive-through component. We have an online component. You know, we're going to want to do a delivery component. And all of those are so unique in the skill set that it takes to manage all of that, and not having had that food industry component. It creates a lot of challenges, which is also part of this reset piece and looking at the processes, the standard operating procedures that we have or don't have, how the system, you know, we started with a point of sale system that said it could do things in ABC order. And when we actually started to utilize it, it's like, yeah, no, we can't quite do that. or not in the way that, you know, you need it to be done. And so you've got to do a lot of pivoting in different arenas.
You too. I mean, the pandemic has utterly and completely changed and recalibrated how anything in person is happening.
That's true. Well, you were very lucky in that sense that, you know, I think food halls somehow have remained attractive to people, you know, and I mean, nationally, food halls are still a growing, you know, attraction. And, you know, I don't remember. I read an article not long ago that there were, you know, I don't know, a bunch of them. I'm not going to say numbers, but it was a significant number of food halls that were slated to open in like the next 5 years. And I was you know, definitely moving past being, I guess, what we'd consider to be a trend.
Yeah. Well, it would kind of make sense from like the kind of like ghost kitchens were kind of popping up pre-pandemic too. And it makes sense that, you know, restaurants in the food industry, we always talk about this, how it's such a high risk prospect and such a difficult place to make a profit that like, it kind of makes sense that these food halls work as these really nice, conduits, not the right word, but this kind of middle ground where it's like you get to have a place and you get to have this like seed without it being like, okay, you have this whole entire, you know, building.
You have an entire restaurant building that you're responsible for.
Yeah. Like,
and, it makes, and 50 yeah. people that you have to pay. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of makes a logical business sense that, like, you know, yeah, this is kind of the logical, and on a societal level, we don't have malls anymore. We don't have food courts really anymore like we used to. And I think there is a basic human need to want to gather in a place where there's a bustle, where there's communication and conversation happening. And I think the food halls are kind of coming back in and being like, oh, remember this experience? We're bringing it back.
You know, I think that, you know, that's a great point in all those things, but there's this other piece is the Kevin Costner Field of Dreams movie, you know, build it and they will come.
I stopped short of saying that before because I'm like, I don't know. Is that?
But that was, yeah. You know, in some ways, I think I had some of that vision in my head too, that, you know, is what people want and they're going to come and be a part of that. And it requires so much more than that. And I think that that's a piece as well, because people are like, yeah, I've been asked, can you come and have one here? Can you have one there? And I'm like, you know, this is built one to reflect the neighborhood. But the thing that you have to understand is about your environment as well. And part of creating the event venue on our garden level is that we really need to create more activities that are going to draw people in versus just saying, oh, they're going to come because we're here. And if you look at some of the other food halls, they're starting to see that. If you're at Third Street Market, you'll see that they have a lot of planning things, even though they have 27 hotels that are right there in walking distance of them. And they have all of these different events and they have all of these different groups and connections and things. You know, we're here in our neighborhood and on the border of Milwaukee and Wauwatosa. But we have to create activity that then draws people in addition to the standard community people. And so that was a piece that, you know, I thought we'd have to do some of, but we have to do a lot more, you know, of that. And so I just say, each neighborhood that a food hall or location that a food hall is in really needs to add a component of structured activity that's going to be there.
Well, I think that was a huge thing from the pandemic too, was this idea of it's not enough to just exist. It is, you have to let people know you are there. You have to activate. And you have to really excite people to get people out of the houses sometimes and out of, you know, the comfort of eating at home or, you know, watching Netflix or, you know, it's, you know, we got kind of, it could be easy to get comfortable doing nothing. And I think a lot of places realize, like, we gotta excite people to come out. We gotta get people back in the habit of leaving the house.
And the social media aspect. Go ahead, Lori, sorry.
No. To finish that thought, yeah, that social media is a necessity. I mean, you just can't. But I was going to say, and also I think the point about what's good for one neighborhood isn't necessarily going to work for another, I think is becoming increasingly true as well. You know, like I think some of the components are going to be similar for a food hall. Like, you need ways of activating and getting people to those spaces. What those things are depends on where you are. Downtown, it's like, well, okay, you have a lot of people there during the week, during lunch. You know, you have a lot of people there on weekends, like when there's a volleyball conference or a, you know, teachers convention or something going on downtown, because families are there and naturally inclined to go to a space like that. But what about the rest of the time? You know, and Crossroads has its own set of, you know, they don't have as much of a natural lunch crowd because there aren't, you know, downtown businesses right there. And the same with, you know, same with you guys. You definitely have a residential neighborhood, and it's somewhat of a walkable community. So people are out, you know, outside, they know you're there. You know, but what that crowd is interested in might be different than something in Bayview, for instance.
And part of creating the space is trying to, you know, the thing that I always had in mind is that the way we use it today may not be the way that we utilize it tomorrow. And so how do I create a space that gives as much flexibility as possible? Because I don't know how the community is going to want to utilize it.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. Are you guys, I mean, we talk about events and things, you know, could I get married at the North Avenue Market? You know, or could I have a baby shower?
Or you're already married, you goof.
I am. She could renew her vows.
I
don't need this.
So we do have people doing baby showers and, you know, book signings and political fundraising and just a variety of different things. So, we're creating the space, and again, how it will be utilized, it's going to be the community. I mean, I didn't think we would have a comedy show in the space in the way it was set up with the dessert pieces. And we had a group saying, hey, we want to do this comedy show. And, you know, and it turned out awesome in the space. So the thing is that the creativity doesn't have to come just from me or from my team. It's going to come from the community as well. I just need to create the flexibility to be able to utilize it in that way. And even from the different vendors that are here and some of the things that they want to do. And sometimes my first answer is no, not because I'm really a no, but it's easier to say no and then process it and to go with it. But sometimes that can stagnate what we're trying to do. And, I had a vendor that created this great idea. And if I had been a part of everything that she was looking to do when she set it up, I might have cut out some of those things. And yet they had lines that were out the door and around the building, you know, to do that. And so we have to, you know, I have to work on letting go of some of, my components as well. So I'm still learning as I move through all of this.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the knowledge to know that you don't know everything and stuff like that, and be like, okay, maybe I don't think this works, but maybe you're onto something here. And then it's stuff like that sometimes.
Yeah. And giving it room to breathe.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and then you make decisions. Yeah, you make decisions along the way. Take a few risks here and there. So, and it sounds like we've kind of gotten around to, because, you know, the question I really, you had a big vision kind of moving into this. And what I'm hearing you say is that vision is always going to be that foundation in what does it take to make this a community hub, a community space. But it could change, you know, like the hope for the future How would you describe that, you know, kind of moving forward?
You know, I think it's just really going to be reflection of what the community needs. The piece that I have to do in doing this whole process is when we look back at my background and the things that I've been through, this is the first career field that I've been in where I've said, I think I might need counseling. And, you know, I mean, whether it's being molested, you know, by 13 different people, some on multiple occasions, to living on my own since being 16 and realistically since I was 5 or 6, or any of the other things in between, there was never a time where I said, you know what, I think I need counseling. But it was in this space that I was like, wow. And so it was a taking a step back. I can be a control freak. And I have to let go, but creating opportunities for people to be able to develop and to grow, and then equipping them with the tools to be able to do that, and knowing that I'm not going to be here forever. So whatever that is going to be, that we're still creating the why, which is being a bridge for our community. We just might need to do that bridging in a different way than the way I started it. And that's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot though. I mean, and that's a lot to kind of, to process and accept too, you know. I mean, that the lack of control on some level is a big,
but the thing is I was never fully in control. And for me, in doing that and being able to let go, it doesn't mean that I stop doing all these things that I need to do to make them happen. The piece is that I can't do it all. And for it to be successful, I have to have the right people and the right vendors and the right, you know, group in place that has the right mentality that comes and contributes to that, because it's such a, you know, a balance of things that you need to do. And that really was freeing and allowed me to re-engage in the process.
So, but if what's the number one vendor, or like one number one kind of genre of food you would love to see move into the food hall? Like what's like at the top of your, we got to get this in here list.
So, you know, we have 5 different food vendors, you know, upstairs. So, you know, we have, Dog City, you guys already know that is here. And I'm filling out the other components. You know, you already know I've talked a little about a vegan component that we have.
The mystery vegan restaurant.
But we have some other components that are there as well. But, you know, if we have, you know, I'm looking from a cultural standpoint. So in Asian, you know, reflecting our city, you know, we have a huge Hmong population. So having that component, you know, and then, you know, the other piece would be maybe there's some type of Italian or something that, you know, when you look at the different venues, you're going to not just see, you're going to see different cultures represented in the food. And I'd like to see 5 different cultures represented in the food that we're able to provide for the market. And because we have so many different cultures in the community, I don't think I could just limit it to this, this, and this. I just like to see those to be different, that are going to give people a glimpse into who they are.
Well, and I was going to say, and if you get good vendors in that space who are all different, that's also what, you know, I think that's what people want explicitly, you know, now. I think there's a drive for folks who become so much more open to eating, you know, eating different foods. I mean, we've seen the growth in the food scene in terms of smaller family owned ethnic restaurants has been incredible, you know, over the past 10 years. And that's driven by, you know, people, mm-hmm. you know, people wanting that and people wanting to undertake, you know, that.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, like Molly Tao, come back to her with Splendid Boba Tea. Molly was a nurse for 5 years. And the last year being a nurse, she decided that she wanted to get into the boba tea business. And she had done all the research. And then it was, you know, she had also been playing around with a Korean chicken sandwich. Korean chicken sandwich was the only thing, the only meat thing. She just had three different versions of it and then the boba tea. And it was, people would come from all over just to be, you know, a part and to get, I think, the best chicken sandwich in the city, that they would come to get for that. So it's finding, you know, to have that cultural experience that you can have, but then other people are coming in to do that. And while they're here, guess what? They're being exposed to other food vendors in other components. And now they're expanding their knowledge and they're expanding their palate and they're expanding the people in whom they engage with. And so it goes back to feeding the why that I want to do, but it's through those mechanisms that that's happening.
Yeah. Well, I hope you get a good chicken sandwich again, and I hope you get more boba tea, because I was very excited to have boba tea like nearer to my house. I'll keep my personal, the rest of my personal wish list, like, you know, like secret.
I like it when Lori Frederick's food coverage just becomes selfish, where it's just like, I want something close by me. Someone open a thing by me specifically.
And when you, the other pieces that when you look at, you know, the, so Bittercube and Mosler's Vault, I mean, those have been really, really popular components and, you know, from a cocktail standpoint. And it's touching people's palate in a way that they don't get in the community here. And so it was really expanding upon that. And so really so thankful for Ira and his team and being, you know, a part of this. But when you go into our sandwich shop, I mean, the soup, salad, sandwich, charcuterie, and the coffee, we have Pilcrow coffee that we do, which is, you know, they do a specialty blend for us. You know, we're able to tap into a lot of the different community pieces, that are already here in town and just introduce them to people that may not, because they didn't cross the neighborhood line. Right. Yeah. And now they're crossing it.
Yeah. Well, and what's fabulous about this, and I think I can say this, if Ira hasn't already let you know, but you know, it's like they're in the Uptown Crossing neighborhood and prior to the pandemic, you know, had a little bar in their space. And I know one of the goals was let's try to make this more of a community gathering space. And I think it never quite tipped in that direction. I mean, they had some neighbors who came in occasionally and would be curious, but I think partnering on something like this that just has a bigger scope to it has helped them, I think, to get to that point too. So what's interesting to me is, you know, in a lot of ways, these are probably goals that people alone, you know, can't even get to. But when you create a space, you know, where people are working together, it seems to happen in a much more effective way. So, So, well, thank you. Thank you for the journey that you've started. This is such a young business, you know, it almost, it feels crazy to have asked you like questions like, would you do it again? but it's such a journey already. And thank you having the tenacity to make it happen.
Lori, I don't know if you realize this, but you are a critical part in for the business being able to be successful to the point it has been in this piece. Early on when it first, you know, came out, and I'm not from Milwaukee and I had just gotten here, and you know, I put in the paperwork and I'm purchasing the building, and all of a sudden the reporters are starting to call, and I'm like, okay, you know, I know how some of this can work and I need to understand someone. And one of my friends, you know, connected me with you. And it was your first piece was, can we create a series that we talk about the process along the way? And you do more than just write the top of the story. You seek to understand and then try to help the reader understand what's beneath and everything that's coming about. And so creating that series of articles, and if people were to go back and to read from the very beginning up to the latest article that you did, they'd really get a true understanding of the intent and the purpose and the market and still see the core value in it. But you brought that to the community in a way. Last year, we were selected as Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation's Governor's Award for the most diverse business in 2022 in the state of Wisconsin. A lot of that is driven from the type of support and explanation of the message and what's happened, because then you see the people coming into the space and the reflection of that. So I'm so grateful to everything that you do, not just for North Avenue Market, but for our community at large. But our journey doesn't get to this point without you and the support that you've provided.
Oh, well, thank you. I can't fully take credit for that. Cause it's the people's story, you know, it's people's stories that resonate, you know, but I love telling stories that resonate. So, so good on you. Thank you.
Cheers to both of you. Thank you both for everything you do. And I'm just going to keep complaining about snow and talking about whether or not Earth likes it. But thank you so much for joining us, Chris. This was a wonderful conversation, sure. as always.
I look forward to seeing kind of where this goes. You know.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you both for allowing me this time to talk about the market and the journey. And I greatly appreciate everything you do. And if there's anyone that I can support as we move forward in this process, don't hesitate to let me know.
One more question for you, maybe the most important one of all.
Oh, yes.
Where can people find? So how can people support North Avenue Market Hall? Where can they find you? Where can they find more information? On that social media website, whatever you want to.
So a couple different places. So first, we are located at 5900 West North Avenue here in Milwaukee. 53208 is the zip code. And you can also go to our website, which is North, NORTHAVEMKT.com. And we also have Facebook. We have Instagram that you can follow us. And we do have TikTok, although I am not the TikToker. And I have a team
I'll have to check out your TikTok.
You are not the TikTokist?
No. So I'm like, you know, that's one of those things you find people to help you and to do some of those things. So we'll be getting more into that.
Yeah. So, well, you can tell your TikToker that they should watch the main Milwaukee Library's TikToks, because they're outstanding.
They've been profiled by like Time, like the Today Show. Yeah. And like,
oh, wow.
Well, they're doing really intricate things. But the thing is, like, how much, I mean, TikTok for the library.
TikTok seems exhausting. Like, you see the work they're doing for these TikToks, and you're just like, they're getting costumes and all this stuff. And I'm just like, what?
I miss the days
when social media was just me taking a photo of my dinner and being like, looks good, hashtag food.
Well, and I think for some people, that probably would be enough. You know, for the library, though, I mean, it's just they've just taken their mission and what they want people to get immersed in. So definitely go check it out. It probably sets a really high bar for your TikToker.
I expect a great Stephen King tribute from you guys come October.
There we go.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Lord. An outstanding conversation, as always. Really fascinating. I think why do you think that food halls have become such a popular thing now?
Again, I feel bad using the word trendy because that implies slightness and temporariness. But it really, it's exploded over the last 4 years here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and with all the skepticism that initially accompanied them, at least yes. here, these people, and I hate the comparison to a food court because nine times out, food courts were always like, yes, similar in the sense that they brought a bunch of different kinds of food together, but usually national chains.
Normally very corporate.
And, fed people kind of junky food, that if you're at the mall for, 8 hours, like some people would be, that you needed to stop for food. But I really do think that it's the variety of things, that you can get on one place. And the fact, I think initially, it's kind of the fact that you have all these different concepts that maybe don't exist anywhere else in a space at one time. And I think that, that changed a little bit with the pandemic. And I know that food halls are having a little bit, food halls that started prior to the pandemic are having a little bit of a harder time trying to get people back in.
As with everything,
But I think that's happening everywhere. But I think the thing about it is that it also feeds that desire to be with other people. So as people are looking like to be out in the world again and, be in spaces that are kind of lively and active, that have energy in them, they're really good places to go because they're full of, people kind of seeking a common thing, but in really, really different ways. I don't know. That's my not complicated answer, but this desire, to go and it's quick. It's not fussy. It's not necessarily all like fast food, but it's quick to get. It can be quick to eat. So it kind of serves this whole, we are busy people doing busy things, and if you have time to sit there, you can, because there's stuff to do. Usually there's things for kids to do, things to occupy adults. And if you just need to grab food and get off and running, you can do that too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think they serve a lot of different purposes, and I think that's probably why we'll continue to see them, because I think there's a place for regular restaurants to exist, but it's a totally different experience, the food is the commonality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. And I do think, I agree that, food courts and food halls are not a one-to-one comparison. But I do think we are a social creature, and I do think, we've lost a lot of those food courts. Mall culture has left us, generally speaking. And I do think there is a kind of sense of, like, I want to be in a place where there's a hubbub, where there is, a sense of, people gathering. And I think right now food halls are kind of taking what food courts crawled so food halls could run, that's kind of how it feels.
No, well, I do think like they've upped the bar, absolutely. any bar that was set by a mall style food court has been upped by a food hall.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Though, I mean, if any of them want to get Norge Julius in there, that's fine with me. Anyways.
Or Julio. We could talk about that some other time. Yeah.
That will be a different podcast. Yes. But if people want to find other podcasts, where can people find them, Lori? Where can people find more Food Crush?
You can find Food Crush on all the social channels. Well, they're probably not all of them. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can find the podcast wherever podcasts are found. So if you came by this one way and prefer a different way, you can pretty much find us on any of those channels. Where can people find more of you, Matt?
You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, allegedly. And it's great. It's great. Love the social media. Definitely isn't rotting my brain. But thank you all for listening. Thank you to our awesome guests. Thank you to our awesome producers. Thank you to my incredible co-host. I second. Hopefully it makes the edit, but I hope they left in the part where our guest just glowed upon you for 5 minutes there, because you deserve it and beyond.
Left me speechless. Thank you.
Laura, you're really good at what you do. Just want you to know that.
Thanks. I like the story underneath the story. And I guess that's what it's all about. Like, and if, you know.
Yeah.
But people trusting you to tell that part of the story is the part that chokes me up. Because they have to trust you. Because, you know, doing things that story is, you know, is important. That story under the story, you know, that you sort of have to get vulnerable for. So, yeah. Well, but yay to that. I mean, Chris did a really, really great job. And even on the podcast, just of being transparent, you know, his life, his experiences, he's had a lot of challenges.
And he's very open about them.
Very open. And I think that's, you know, I think that's therapeutic for him, you know, in some regards. You know, we tend to keep things like that close to us. But having that out on the table, you know, there's good and bad about that, I think. But he feels pretty comfortable talking about it. I mean, it's definitely part of his story, part of how he became who he became. And I think part of why he really, really, his value, the value that he places on community, and I'm sure he's not alone. I mean, he owes, you know, his childhood, his survival, like so many things to that community of people, you know, at the Boys and Girls Club, who gave him a place that was home when home wasn't the greatest place. And I think that's why, like, but he's a sharer that way, and that made it a lot easier, you know, to tell that story. So, but here's to that, because that North Avenue Market is in a place where there have been geographical boundaries, you know, for folks for a very long time. And Uptown Crossing, you know, it has places like McBob's that have succeeded in getting people from kind of all the neighborhoods surrounding it to go there, you know, and gather together. But there definitely was a need for more of that. And anybody who can get people to transgress that space at 60th Street on West North Avenue, you know, either way, are doing a service to the world. So,
well, and on there, yeah. Thank you for. Sorry, I don't know. Thank you to them. Thank you to you, and most importantly, thank you to our listeners. Without you, this podcast wouldn't be happening, and we wouldn't be bringing these stories to you. So, thank you for listening, and as always, keep cooking.